a former pro, an SEC analyst, and a damn good dog. Matt Stinchcomb is only on the College Football Voice of the South. Presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and ASW Distillery.
Matt Stinchcomb joining us each and every Tuesday, today being no exception to that rule.
Can I ask you a quick question? And during that intro, so you're a College Football Hall of Famer. You're an SEC Network analyst. You were a professional football player.
First-round draft choice.
Right, and you're a damn good dog. Which one is most important to you these days?
It depends on how you're spelling dog.
D-A-W-G.
No, that's probably number one.
All right.
You grow up in the state, and all the other stuff is great. In no way do I think that diminishes the other stuff. But you grow up in Georgia, you play at Georgia, and if you're thought to be a DGD, AWG, then that's a pretty good one.
You got to play to the home
canine version.
You got to play to the home audience. Matt Stinchcomb, a very smart man, as he joins us on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line. We'll talk about this bill being passed in California in just a second. What do you make, though, of Jeremy Pruitt playing the baby games, telling Georgia, we're not going to tell you who our quarterback is?
Try to create an advantage wherever you can. Having seen Tennessee up close, frankly, if you're Georgia, it should not matter a ton. You know, one of their guys, they've got two young quarterbacks behind Garantano, and one of them's more of a runner than the other. They're both incredibly young football players in their careers, especially collegiately, both freshmen, one redshirt, one true. So, does their offense turn on its head completely with one in there versus the other? Not really. So I don't know that he's gaining much of an advantage, but why not, if it's a nuisance? And even if it isn't, maybe he just doesn't feel like talking about it. So he's like, you know what? Here's another thing. Maybe he doesn't know.
Yeah.
We had him versus UTC, and they said that they planned on playing someone other than Garantano early in the game. And we said, great, who? And he said, I don't know. I don't know yet. That's kind of rare.
Sometimes
you don't see that very often.
Yeah, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Like, I don't know. And that's a real thing.
Apparently he didn't expect that follow-up question.
I think he sounds beaten up.
Yeah, he is beaten up. That job will beat you up. I mean, let's look at it for the last 10 years, last 12 years. Right, the bright spot being maybe 09. Do we want to say that under Kiffin, that was a potential bright spot, a relaunching of a program? He's in there. He's an adjutant. He's irritating Urban Meyer. He's taking shots at some of the established coaches in the conference, and he's winning games. Made it to a bowl game. I think he won, nine games that year? Beat Georgia?
Yeah, they went 7-6 that year, and he almost beat Alabama. He came close. He kind of was competitive against Florida. But you're right, that's probably the best season in retrospect since Philip Fulmer left.
Right. And ever since then, that team, that job, has just been chewing guys up and spitting them back out. And Jeremy Pruitt came in there, and we talked about this when they did their game. Coach Pruitt has led somewhat of a charmed life. I'm not saying it's not earned, but his experiences as far as the teams that he's worked for, they've been pretty sporty. I mean, you come in there and you're coaching at Hoover High School, not a bad gig. Then you go to Alabama, even better. You leave there for one season. You go to FSU. You coach Mark Stoops' defense or guys that he recruited, and you do a great job of it, win a national championship. Then you go a couple of years to Georgia, go back to Alabama, and then you're handed the keys to what can only be considered a full rebuild. I mean, stripped down to the nuts and bolts. This thing needs to be scraped and primed at Tennessee, and that's nothing like what Coach Pruitt has ever dealt with prior to. So if you look at him and you're like, man, Jeremy, you look rough. Well, I think it's because he's got an experience that he's never really been put through before as a football coach.
Yeah, we do want to talk about the California thing in one second, but the idea that Alabama and the AP at least, and I know what matters and what doesn't matter, and not much matters really as you head to the beginning of October. Mindset-wise, can you buy into what North Carolina did to Clemson as saying, you know what, I thought they were the number one team, but they're not anymore? I mean, any thoughts on at least the switch at 1-2 and what Georgia might be looking at behind them with the offenses that are behind them?
Yeah, the goal is just to be in the top four. And if you can play close to home, even better. So if you're 1, you're 2, you're whatever, and as you mentioned, all these numbers are, they're numbers in name only. They don't really matter. The committee won't come out with their first ranking until the first week in November. And even then, I don't know why they even bothered to come out with it then, other than to give us something to talk about on TV and radio, is they start out with a new fresh sheet of paper. They say it every week. Oh, we started with a fresh sheet of paper. Then why did you even bother to rank them last week if you're just going to start with a brand new sheet of paper? But as it is right now, Clemson does this every year. They come out there, they stub their toe, they look ugly in a game. Last year it was Syracuse's turn. A couple of years ago, I believe it was Pittsburgh, where it's either a near miss or a loss. And you say, man, well, maybe Clemson might not be as good as we thought they were. And then they proved to be the best team in the country at the end of the season. I think North Carolina's improved from a mentality standpoint more than anything else. It's hard to get physically better in a season, or in an off season, really, under Mack Brown. But he's got them believing. That certainly helps. I don't think that Clemson is as good as they were a season ago. I don't know that they've shown to be the number one team in the country. And right now, you know, it's just fun to reshuffle the deck every chance you get. So you have a close call versus a North Carolina team that lost to App State the previous week. No way you could be the best team in the country anymore. Let's slide you all the way down to 2 and let Alabama have a turn. At this point, who cares?
Fair enough. Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Do you care about Tim Tebow saying Georgia's offense has been too conservative, especially in that Notre Dame game?
It doesn't. I don't care that it was Tim Tebow that said it. I don't disagree with the commentary, although I don't know that it's been necessary to be overly aggressive. And we've seen this time and time again this year where you wonder, could they take the bridle off a little bit, especially in the passing game, and utilize what we all think to be a burgeoning area of strength at wide receiver? Maybe they could. And versus Notre Dame, what's interesting is that the commentary has pivoted towards, that they just aren't as aggressive as they should have been. Well, what we were all talking about going into that game is they don't have to be aggressive at all. Just hand the football off and run it right down their throat. Well, what's aggressive about that? Nothing. They came out, and I think they ran it once in the first 4 plays, something like that, and they ended up making all their money, their yards, largely in the passing game. Now, did they go out there just chucking it in 5 wides? They didn't. But, it's interesting how the narrative has swung almost 180 degrees given where it started, which was, man, Georgia's going to be able to just pound it down Notre Dame's throat. Then you win a close game versus what may be a pretty darn good football team in Notre Dame, and it's, they got to take the reins and the governor off of this offense and start opening up in the passing game.
Yeah, Tebow used the term hamstring, as in they really hamstring Jake Fromm and DeAndre Swift. Do you think they'll be more aggressive, more open as the season goes on?
I would have to know in what ways is this offense currently hamstringing those two players specifically. With DeAndre Swift, versus Notre Dame, there's very little to point to that says that that he would have been hamstrung. He had a couple opportunities to break big runs and literally tripped on Andrew Thomas's like 7-stud cleat. Otherwise, he bangs his head on the goalpost. So, he rips off that run. It probably would have been about 75, 80 yards. The stat sheet looks really good because he would have finished, just shy of 200 in the game, and nobody's talking about hamstrings. So, it's contextual. I do think that they can get more out of the passing game, and I ultimately think that they will out of necessity. But 4th game of the season, I think it made sense. The way it unfolded, especially what we all anticipated seeing from Georgia offensively, I don't think it was nearly as lacked as much aggression as maybe the narrative is now speaking to.
Yeah, and real quick, I think defense gets off the bus. I'd like to be able to counterpunch you or knock you out with the left or the right on offense.
And there
I think
you go.
That, yeah, I think that's the one thing that maybe I want to see. Do you have an ability, if it's an Auburn game, if it's whoever the hell it is, do I have the ability to knock you out with both fists?
That's right. Yeah, and right now, if you're Georgia, your defense is playing pretty good ball. They're not necessarily a dominant unit. They're going to be better. They're playing pretty good ball right now. I think the way that game unfolded versus Notre Dame made a lot of sense, which is basically, you know what? I don't think I have to get into some track meet outscore you type of a game right here. I think we can shorten this football game and force you to try to steal a possession. And that's the way it shook out versus Notre Dame.
I think we've talked to you about, I know we have, about paying players. But what's going on in California is not the same as paying players. We're not asking the school. I'm not asking Johnny Booster, although Johnny Booster could certainly be involved in this, to pay where the swim team and the tennis team. But Nick will tell you, I've done not a 180, I've done a 540 on this, because to me, the inability to sell your likeness or whatever it is you are and however valuable you might be to a school or somebody who says, well, we'd like to give you a job or pay you for your likeness, that's the one that's bothered me more than ever. Why shouldn't I be able to? And I'm sorry, I get banged. If somebody wants to give you a car, guess what? If you don't play well, they're going to take the car. Somebody sets you up in an apartment, you don't play well, they're going to take the apartment. That's life every bit as much as anything else.
What are your thoughts on this law that's going to take effect, I guess, January the 1st, 2023?
Well, I think the effect that it's going to have, and it may very likely have been the intent all along. I don't want to give our friends in politics in California too much credit, but they're going to force the hand of the NCAA, which has seen this coming, and if they haven't seen it coming, they're far more blind than I think we all thought, and that's pretty darn blind. So they're going to have to do something here. There's no way that you walk away from California and its member institutions and say, well, golly jeepers, you know, we're just not there yet from a policy standpoint. And so because of that, your institutions can't participate in NCAA-sanctioned play. Sorry. That's a non-starter. And so because of that, and as we know, the state of Florida, I believe, has announced they are likely going to introduce it. I'm in the state of South Carolina right now. They've already got a bill that's being proposed that mirrors in a lot of ways the California bill. There's a nuance to the bill that's being introduced in the state of New York that's somewhat separate and apart from what California has proposed in being able to be compensated for name and likeness. But the end result of all of it is that there is not going to be any explosion of the NCAA. That's a pipe dream. That's not going to happen. I don't think anyone, if they step back and think about it, want that to happen. Do you want the NCAA to function far better? Absolutely. And at the same time, if you think that somehow the NCAA implodes over this, and then there will be any opportunity to introduce a new governing body over all these different constituencies and conferences, you're nuts. It would never happen. There wouldn't be enough common ground that could be reestablished at that juncture. So for sure, the NCAA will pivot. They're going to figure it out. What that ends up looking like, I don't know. And whether or not institutions themselves, meaning the universities, are then enabled to compensate athletes directly, I don't know if that's where this is pointing or not. But for sure, what California has done is they have accelerated whatever processes were already in place at the NCAA. And if they weren't already in place, they've certainly initiated them at the NCAA. And ultimately, I think we'll see an overarching policy that will allow California, South Carolina, and whatever other states pass similar bills to continue to participate in NCAA events.
Right. I don't think they're ever going to be able to say, now you're out. You as a state are out. So that was a pipe dream. They shouldn't have even said that out loud, because that lets me know that there was a panic mode. That's not going to happen. So don't even have that fall out of your lips. But they've done that in the past. They've not gotten it right initially. Now they're going to try to fix it. Here's my question to you. If it's a car dealership, because that seems to be the easiest one, if a kid's likeness is the quarterback Joe, running back Bill.
Nick Cellini of the UCLA Bruins for Malibu Chevrolet.
Right. Do you have a problem with that?
There will be problems with that. It's just a given. You are inviting, this is especially in the age of, hey, four games in, I don't feel like playing anymore. I don't know that I like this team or the way this season is going, or, you know, you hurt my feelings the other day at practice, and so I'm going to shut it down, and maybe I'm going to transfer. Then again, maybe I won't. And then we introduce the capacity for economic benefit. I think that can exacerbate, in conjunction with some of these other policies, a problem that maybe isn't quite that big of an issue right now and turn it into a full-blown epidemic. It might not. I think it's likely, though. I mean, we all know, I think, that the opportunity for influence and bad action with this type of policy, I think, heightens that opportunity significantly. But the other piece of it, too, is what does this look like? Is it independent of the trademarks and brands of the institution? And how closely can the name and likeness mimic the brands and trademarks of the respective institutions? Meaning, you know, if I play for pick a school, UCLA Bruins, can my name and likeness look anything like, am I wearing a UCLA jersey, independent of whatever it is, entity that's using that name and likeness and paying for mine specifically. If they don't pay for that trademarked or branded logo to be used independent of my arrangement with the player directly, can he even look or appear as if they're representing the university in any form or fashion? I don't know.
Yeah,
and at that point, how marketable is that?
I guess their endorsement deals cannot conflict with the school's existing contract. So if you're a Nike school, you can't do something with Under Armour, I guess is my understanding.
Is that part of the law?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's a part of it. But again, I don't know how far reaching that's going to be as far as you being able to wear the UCLA. We keep coming back to UCLA. The UCLA jersey, I guess it's California. So.
Well, UCLA is a long way away from here.
Geographically. Yeah, we don't care. What the hell? And by the way, then I've heard
what is in California?
How do I care? It hurts so much feelings.
Another country. Yeah. And it is in the state of
right.
You know, the kind of appreciate state for it's pertinent for this conversation, but I find that curious, right? Well, why is that? Well, why can't I? Well, if there's a, you know, if we got to deal with a Ford dealership and some Chevy dealership wants me to do some ads for them and they'll give me a car to drive around in exchange for it. Oh, wait, I can't do that.
Yeah, that's the next one to lose.
Has a deal.
Don't worry. Take that to court. They'll lose that one as well.
Right.
But here's Matt. Here's what I've always thought though. Like my whole idea of just, it's life. Someone's better, they get the reward of that. I'm trying to take it out of the back alley in some way. I'm just trying to put it on Front Street. Now, the goofy part is
somebody's going to buy the F-150 or get the F-150. But, by the way, look in the glove box.
Right.
There's a little present in there for
because
you. It'll still continue.
Now it becomes the idea of how much are we actually going to say out loud what the deal was.
Well, here's the thing, though, guys. I mean, this isn't going to take the back alley out of anything. There's only so many marketable guys on these teams, and to think that that's the only number of guys that might be influenced due to untoward actions by boosters and others is, I think, a false sense of reality.
Okay, your eligibility is done.
How many of these guys on these programs are actually marketable on a scale that's of any significance? How many radio spots can you do?
Well, there's a $5,000. Yeah, there's a $5,000 guy and there's a $50 guy, and everybody's going to have to figure out who's who. I want to ask you, your eligibility is done. You're already in the College Football Hall of Fame. Were you always conscious of the free meal? Were you always conscious of, like, was that something that you thought about?
I better not do this or else.
Nah. Well, nobody ever offered it. And that's just a fact. And that's, I don't know if they thought, and whoever they is, and every program, every school and at the amateur level has a they, maybe they just didn't think that I would be interested, but I never had to deal with it because it was never offered. And you know what? I wasn't Tim Tebow, didn't play a position that would warrant that sort of thing. But I think that does speak to, on some level, look, we had a bunch of guys on that team. The marketability of individual players, there's no way I would never arrive on that radar screen, and neither would most. You're talking about one or two guys. One or two guys per program that could have something of any level of significance. And so the question would be, too, does it siphon off deals that otherwise would have been with the school that permeates throughout that athletic department that benefits more than just one player? It could benefit entire teams and programs. Are those monies now maybe reallocated towards an individual at a much smaller scale? And what impact does that have then on the resources and financial applicability of those monies? Had they otherwise been given to the institution at large?
All right, last one for you. You mentioned a four games thing. We know what's going on at Houston. Obviously, enough of us know that story about whether the kid's going to be there or not. Whether I want to ask you if you actually ran a program, if you were a head coach, and it's not a deal with you and the kid where you go, hey, you know what, come back next year, we're going to be better, and this is going to be better for anybody. But a kid comes up to you and says, I'm done today. I played my fourth game, I'm done. I'd really like to sit out. Do you think you'd have the, I don't know what the word is, would you tell them to get the hell out of my building?
Yeah, I'm not a head coach, but it'd be hard for me to say, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, just tap out. You just don't like the way things are going. You're too good for this team and your teammates. Why don't you circle the airport for a year? They're all different, though. The kid at Houston, I think that there's a very low likelihood outside looking in that he's back at Houston next year, right? It seems obvious what the likeliest outcome is. You preserve a year of eligibility, and now you're going to transfer and play at a bigger school. and layer in what we just talked about, right? So maybe you're a really good football player at a school like a Houston, an American Athletic Conference school, and maybe you're a guy that was third-team All-American or something, and your next year's team's going to be pretty good. Maybe you come out to a hot start, but then you realize, wait a minute, I'm getting a lot of attention. I've been on a lot of SportsCenter segments or whatever else, and we played on Thursday Night Football, and I balled out. But if I shut it down now, redshirt and transfer somewhere else to a bigger school with larger marketing opportunities. So
you're a free agent. I mean, you're a free agent.
Well, I'm not only a free agent, but I have my motivations have. It's potential for your motivations to be muddied. There's an additional path towards what? Affluence, opportunity, achievement, however you want to measure it. And it might not include the current school where I was developed, recruited, who knows, brought out of obscurity. And now it turns out I'm really good. But, you know, grass is greener elsewhere. I'm a free market capitalist, if there ever was one. And so, look, in the purest sense of the word, all of this makes sense on the face of it. I think that there are very significant potential downside to how this can deteriorate the team construct. And the way it is right now, with a four-game, hey, I can redshirt, and with the transfer portal adding flexibility, and the trend that we see with immediate eligibility, what exactly are we building here?
Well, the genie isn't going to go back in the bottle anytime soon. What game you got this weekend?
Oh, I'm headed to Columbia, Missouri, where the Tigers are going to take on the folks from Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Down there in Alabama.
Kelly Bryant's playing pretty well this year, so maybe he'll put on a show for you.
Hey, there's a transfer for you. How about that?
Yeah,
worked out well for the kid.
They're all over the place.
Everything circled back around. Matt Stinchcomb, always a pleasure. Enjoy Columbia. We'll do it again next week.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
By the way, I'm going to nominate you to be on that Committee of 13. I know you got jobs to do and everything else, but would you do that? Would you be on that 13-person committee?
Which one?
The one that actually says who gets to play in the Final Four.
No, I don't think I'd want to be on it. But there's only one poll that matters, and they make you work for an entire month.
Don't do them any favors.
A lot of sense.
All right, then you're out.
Don't do them any favors, Domino. And I wasn't aware, by the way, you had that kind of power.
Well, I know a couple of people.
All right, who knew? You're right, Matt. Matt Stinchcomb joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.